puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time once again for Abandoned Manitoba, where we say good morning to Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Keisha.
Now, what are we discussing this week?
Well, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, I'm working furiously on a new book that I hope will be published later this fall. So I need time to work on it, and therefore I will be here every 2 weeks. Some of the times will be what I'm calling Abandoned Manitoba Revisited. And that's where we're going to look back at some of the places we have discussed in previous episodes. This week, we're going way back to the very beginning to revisit the conversation that I had with former host Terry McLeod over 7 years ago in 2015. At that time, we talked about the Indian Residential School at Birtle.
Oh, wow. Where do we start?
Well, I suppose we start in 1931. That's when the school that still stands today opened at Birtle at the top of a hill overlooking the town. Nearby was the site of the former residential school. It was a two-story stone building that had opened 37 years earlier in 1894. The school was operated by an organization called the Women's Missionary Society of the Presbyterian Church in Canada. Its mandate was to provide a general education to Indigenous children, as well as vocational training. For boys, this meant working in the school's on-site farm to raise livestock and to grow garden crops, while the girls did domestic chores.
And what does the building actually look like?
It was a brick and concrete building on a steel skeleton. The basement contained washrooms, a dining hall, a kitchen, and a laundry. There were offices, classrooms, and dormitories on the upper three floors. And on the back of the building was a one-story gymnasium and assembly hall. The floor layout of the dormitory space on the upper two floors was intended for strict segregation of the sexes. There was a girls' area and the boys' area, and never the twain shall meet. On the west end of the building, there's a two-story brick residence that was intended for the principal of the school and his family to live in.
And when did the school close?
Well, responsibility for the Birtle Residential School transferred from the Presbyterians, or later the United Church, to the federal government in 1969. By the time the facility closed the following year in 1970, there were just 41 students. And since then, the building and the surrounding land has gone through several changes of ownership, most recently in mid-2016 to the present owner.
Are there any graves on the former school grounds?
Well, it's a logical question, of course. And if here in southern Manitoba, there were definitely cemeteries associated with other residential schools like the one at Elkhorn and the one at Brandon. But there's not, as far as we know, a cemetery at Birtle. Now, the absence of a formal cemetery does not necessarily mean there are no graves. It's certainly possible that unmarked graves do exist, especially around the original school building site, the one from the 1890s. But to my knowledge, unlike the other residential school sites in Manitoba, there has been no systematic search carried out at Birtle.
And what condition is the building in today, Gordon?
Well, I visited it back in 2012, and at that time, the main building was in terrible condition. All of the windows were broken. Inside, there was extensive vandalism, you know, with things like walls torn down in many places and graffiti spread all over the place. You know, I came back 3 years later in 2015 with a couple of filmmakers, and we actually made a short documentary about it. The video is on the Manitoba Historical Society's YouTube channel. And if anybody's interested in watching it, they can go to mhs.ca/Birtle. Then in late 2018, I visited the school for a third time, and that time I met its present owner. I saw how badly deteriorated the building had become in just 6 years since I had first seen it. And this was due to the repeated vandalism and exposure to the elements that was occurring. You know, the owner told me just how frustrated he had been by people who had stolen much of the electrical copper wire from the building's interior. You know, they'd also taken the metal pipes that used to conduct water from the roof. So now rain and snow melt simply runs into the building. And of course, that causes extensive water damage.
And what's the present status of the former residential school?
Well, I made several inquiries to try to find out what, if anything, is happening there. I started by checking with the municipality, and they referred me to the Bertel, Miniota and District Community Development Corporation, or CDC for short. It owns a 50-acre land parcel to the south of the school building, where the original residential school was situated. I spoke to somebody at the CDC, and they told me that plans to build homes on the property have fallen through, partly because of the difficulty in bringing such services as sewer and water to the site. But I also suspect there's also some concern about the possibility of there being unmarked graves from that original residential school.
And how about the owner of the school itself?
Well, I made contact with him, and although he once entertained the possibility of restoring the building as a, well, maybe a museum or a cultural center, he has given up on that idea. He's willing to sell the property, basically to recover his investment. He doesn't want to make a profit. In 2021, the federal government announced a $100 million fund to assist Indigenous people in dealing with the legacy of the schools. That fund can provide resources for former residential school buildings to be demolished. But the catch is that those buildings must be on reserve land. The former school in Bertel is not. Well, meanwhile, there actually has been a recent initiative to reconnect Indigenous people with the Bertel School site.
Oh, what's that?
Well, last September, for the first National Truth and Reconciliation Day, a young Indigenous woman who is an active athlete and whose grandparents attended the Bertel School organized what she called a reconciliation run. It was a 21-kilometer half marathon where participants were going to start at the residential school and make their way to the Birdtail Sioux Dakota Nation. Unfortunately, there was a last-minute misunderstanding between the landowner and the run organizers. So instead of starting at the school, the run started on the CDC property. Incidentally, there will be a second reconciliation run at Bertel this year on the 30th of September, and they're actually now looking for sponsors. So if any of our listeners are interested in helping them, they should visit the website for the reconciliation run, www.reconciliationrun.ca.
You know, Gordon, what do you think will happen to the former Bertel Residential School?
It's a tough problem, you know, really. The owner has come to realize that his dream of establishing a commemorative facility in the former school will never happen. You know, in light of the deterioration of the building, it just is too far gone. Meanwhile, the CDC has given up on developing a residential subdivision on land, you know, where there may be unmarked graves from the original school. They simply want to recover their investment in the land, and that's understandable. I have no crystal ball in this matter, but it seems to me that the best solution for all concerned may be for the federal government to purchase both the school site and the building, as well as the CDC land, then turn it all over to a community such as the Birdtail Sioux Dakota Nation. You know, maybe the area could be turned into an urban reserve, you know, where the Indigenous people could decide the fate of the former school. In the meantime, they would be able to use it for future reconciliation runs.
Well, a very interesting story, Gordon. Thank you so much for bringing it to us. What will we be talking about in 2 weeks?
Well, a popular winter pastime, of course, is cross-country skiing. And one of the places where listeners might ski is the Trans-Canada Trail, known officially as the Great Trail. Here in Manitoba, parts of the trail follow abandoned railway lines that crisscross much of the province. Next time, I'm going to talk about some of the historic sites, including a place called Mountain Glen that one could encounter while skiing or walking the Trans-Canada Trail.
Looking forward to it, Gordon.
We'll talk in 2 weeks. Bye-bye for now.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.